The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
I'm also joined by at RattyCat on Twitter.
Happy New Year, merrinessness.
And we have the luchador himself, at PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yay! Vine is dead.
Yeah, I know it's sick. Goodness
gracious. And Instagram sucks, so there you go.
Yeah, so before Tim runs into the promos, I wanted to say Merry New Year to everybody, as Roddy Cat was so kind enough to remind us that this is our show to kick off the new year.
Indeed. So yes, happy 2017 to everyone. Hopefully you didn't get too wild and crazy for the new year. If you did, it's all right, because as of this recording, it's the 5th, January 5th. You should have recovered by now.
Right. We've all been back to work at least a day or two.
Yep. So, of course, remember that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can go to theclicknation.com and you can go to our live page to tune in. Also on the homepage, we have links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Also subscribe on YouTube, Stitch Radio, iTunes, Google Play, and all podcast locations. Remember, we're part of the Coast Live Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. And while you're on the CSPN, make sure to go to their shop and buy some Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. Go to shop.cspn.us. So as we said, it is our year-end show. We're doing best of, worst of for a number of different categories.
For the year 2016, may it not rest in peace. The hell with you, 2016.
Well, yeah, well, I hope you all had a horrible holiday. Worst year of your life.
The Grinch has decided to stay a little longer.
I got to drink more of this wine. Hold on. Oh, this was a Christmas gift, by the way. I got a little
nice
Darth Vader goblet here. I can drink my wine out of his skull.
Nice.
Did the cup or the wine cost more?
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure the cup, but... Oh, man, nice. They have those R2-D2 steins. I kind of want to get one of those.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
So our first category of the night is most disappointing comic book TV show.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, we should hack in with some... There you go. You get to sort of introduce each category. That would have been nice to think of.
I don't know why I thought of Magnum P.I. for that one, but that's fine.
Magnum P.I.?
Yeah.
Huh. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
So the way we'll do it is I'll just randomly pick someone to start us off in each category, just so it's not just going down in order over and over again. So, Roddy, why don't you kick things off?
Yes. Oh, most disappointing comic book TV show, which has gone the way of Divine. Powers! Exactly. Also, Crickets would have worked there also, because I don't think anybody was watching that show.
All right.
Not really.
Yeah.
Hit us up with your selection, Doug.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah, no, PCN_dirt is going to.
Hold on. We'll just did something. Like, you come in here and wait, hold on.
You might be trying to get us up with something, so we'll come back to him.
Let's wait. Do-ba-do. Here we go. Boom!
Oh,
no.
That's awesome.
Great. For those watching the video who could have seen what that was.
Yeah, we're gonna totally add that to like our resolutions. We need to get more people watching this on video.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna save all these slides. I'm gonna start one for every
and get some stingers
to go through here.
Yeah, but after you're done, maybe throw them in Dropbox or something, and I'll add them to the final episode upload.
All right. So anyway, my pick is actually The Tick on Amazon. It's a pilot for a new Amazon TV show. They've got this weird thing Amazon does where they make like 3 or 4 different shows for you to go watch, and then you vote for them, and supposedly the best one gets turned into a series. But they've had some real stinkers the past couple of years. There have been several of them where I've watched all of them and just been like, oh, I don't want to see any of these. But this year they did one based on The Tick, and I was really excited to see it because I love some Tick. I'm a guy who loves some Tick.
Spoon!
And so gravity is a harsh mistress. So so they did the pilot, and it is just so cheap. You can tell that they had a budget of about $12.38.
Oh, no.
Would you say lifeless?
And that was the other thing. It was not funny. Like, there were so many points where it could have been funny, and it's like it was about to hit a punchline or do something humorous, it like cut it off or, you know, just ran right over it. And so it was so, so bad, so disappointing. So, yeah, that's my pick. The Tick pilot on Amazon is my most disappointing comic book TV show this year.
Is it still on Amazon?
Yeah, you can go watch it if you want. They only did the one episode, the one pilot. But if you want to go check it out, it's up there.
Right, because I guess, because people have to vote to see if it actually gets...
Right, and they'll save the old one. Yeah. I mean, they paid for them, so the old ones will be on there if you search. So it'll stick around for a long time. But I have a feeling it's not going to be making it to a series.
Hmm.
So if you'd like to take, go back and find the animated one.
Well, I thought the live action one with Patrick Warburton was great.
That is right, yeah.
Honestly, that's probably the most people's exposure to the character anyway. Yeah. That's what they'll recognize it from.
So, anyway, all right, moving on.
All right. My selection is going to be Gotham on Fox.
Oh, man.
Just because I haven't enjoyed the show at all, really.
That show's got a cheese to it, I admit. But that show's actually been all right for the cheese. I couldn't get past
the third episode of the first season. I can't understand being on... Was season 3 or what is it? Season 4?
Yeah, like whatever episode they're up to.
I think it is 3, yeah.
Season 3, need more wine.
And I guess I'll finish up the category. The most disappointing comic book TV show, my vote is for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now that Ghost Rider is too expensive to use. And the producers actually came out and said that because it's due specifically to the expensive effects required for the character. So that's a huge disappointment for me.
All right.
Cool.
All righty. Let me get off of you for a second. So next up, another disappointing category. So we did comic book TV shows. Now we have most disappointing comic book movie.
Oh, boy.
This is going to be fun.
We actually have consensus between two of our hosts on one movie.
You know what? The only reason why I didn't pick that movie is because I still haven't seen it.
Same.
Same. And let me tell you, once you see it, you're going to change your vote.
All right, so I have to say this real quick. So a lot of movies I haven't seen, there was like two of them I watched this morning, and I was almost going to watch that movie that the consensus was on, but I didn't want to stay up another 2 hours to actually watch it.
That's true.
So that was the other reason.
Gotcha. All right, well, I guess we'll start. I'll start this particular category. We'll wait for the consensus pick. My pick, and if I recall correctly, you know, I've definitely taken shots at this movie in multiple episodes of the Comic Chronicles in 2016. What I'm referring to is Batman v Superman. Parentheses: You Must Save Martha. So, you know, that was just a pretty disappointing movie, given that, you know, not that the hopes of the DC cinematic universe were riding on that, but it almost felt like it to me, and that was a pretty big disappointment.
And I will go with, again, the movie I watched earlier today, Suicide Squad, the theatrical cut, because I wasn't going to go back and watch the extended cut also.
Okay.
I say that because, and I didn't think it was a bad movie. It's just like, okay, well, everything was in the trailer, and Will Smith's Mike Lowry. Yeah, was what it was. And
Cousin Lowry.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, it was what it was.
Gotcha. See, I don't know when I'm going to sit down and watch Suicide Squad. I'm going to, I guess, wait until it finally hits one of the pay cable networks or even Netflix, because Civil War just hit Netflix.
Right. Netflix, which that'll and probably Batman, be in a couple of months.
Batman v Superman is on HBO.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But is it the extended cut?
That's what people have been asking.
I don't know.
Probably not.
I haven't even watched. I own the extended cut, thinking that maybe I'll watch this and give it a reprieve. Nope, I haven't decided to devote that much time to it.
That's actually why I didn't put it. Well, because I didn't put that because I have watched the extended. I was like, okay, it redeemed a little bit of it.
Okay,
yeah, I've seen the extended cut twice now. I love
it. Wow. Okay.
Well, I almost bought it when it was on sale during the Black Friday sales, but sad not to.
All right. Well, I bought it when it first came out, and it was on sale at a good price. So, you know, I plunked it down and got the digital copy. So I have multiple ways of watching it. I still can't bring myself to do it. All right. And last but not least, we have the two picks by two of our hosts for most disappointing comic book movie, and that is...
X-Men Apocalypse!
It's so bad that some of y'all haven't even seen it.
Like, you saw Batman versus Superman and you saw Suicide Squad, but you saw the trailer for X-Men Apocalypse and you said nope. That says something.
Yeah, that's kind of accurate, actually.
Excuse me, yes.
So
it's, I mean, like, honestly, it's so bad it made me go, you know what, maybe I'll watch X-Men 3 again.
Man.
And I didn't mind that much.
And everything I had heard about Apocalypse from, you know, from the hubbub online, and granted, given some of that's, you know, rabble, but given what I saw about it, I was like, I can probably wait for this.
All right.
I waited so long that I still didn't, so.
Okay. All right. So I guess we can move on to a positive category now. Our favorite comic book TV show. Who wants to start here?
I'll go ahead and kick things off. So mine is no surprise if you've checked out some of the recaps I've done on various sites. It is The Flash from CW.
Cool. So Tim, before we move on to the next pick, I want you to tell me how it is that this is, I guess, maintained its status as a favorite of yours, because I haven't been able to get back into it.
It's probably the most, the one show that feels the most like a comic book brought to the small screen.
Got it.
Yes, Barry Allen is finding a different speedster each season, but they still make it cool. And they even incorporated the DC universe changing event, Flashpoint, which ended up changing certain things, not only in the Flash's corner pocket of the Arrowverse, but also in other series like Arrow.
Right.
They had a cool crossover with all the other CW shows when the Dominators came. And you actually get to see cool time travel and the repercussions from that time travel.
All right.
Let's see, Roddy, why don't you go next?
Okay, well, I feel like I agree with everything you said about The Flash. I'll put it that way. And The Flash is still consistently good as far as the other one. I kind of want to still give a nod to Legends, though, because Legends is just dumb fun. But I'm kind of going with you with the Flash.
Okay.
First pick is kind of surprising.
Well, the thing is, I don't watch any of the comic book TV shows. I mean, that's I'm so annoyed by most of them.
But still, your pick is good, though.
And I can't. Well, but the thing is, like, all the live action shows I've fallen out of, you know, touch with. I don't watch any of them anymore. And so the question is, what would be my favorite comic book TV show? It took a long time for me to really think about, like, what I watch a lot of. I watch some stuff that have been turned into comics, but I'm thinking of what is something that started as a comic that's a currently running TV show. And while I was thinking about this, I had the song stuck in my head, "The Night Begins to Shine," and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's from Teen Titans Go! Teen Titans Go is the best comic book TV show that I watch." With, I mean, oh my god! Not only is it the best lineup of the Titans. But just the humor on that show is just like punch, 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 punch from top to bottom. Mm. And they throw in comic book specific jokes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are jokes about Nightwing, which, you know, if you don't read the comics, you have no idea why is this funny that Robin is jealous of Nightwing, because he is Nightwing, you know, it's just like all of this fun little stuff that they throw in there. And so, I, you know, it's just the perfect way of taking, like, being true to the material, but making it kid friendly and fun. And a lot of times that's really difficult to do, but they've done it on that show, and it is my favorite comic book TV show.
And I will say, to add on to that, all the flack that Teen Titans Go got in the beginning when it first started can probably now be levied towards Justice League Action. That's all I'm going to say.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, I forgot Action started.
Was that in 16?
Yes.
Yeah,
actually. Oh, wow, okay. Yeah. I haven't watched it yet.
It's before Christmas.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, and I'll wrap up the category. My favorite comic book TV show, it's both sides of the same coin. It's Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ghost Rider, because both Robbie Reyes and Johnny Blaze appeared. So that I was pretty jazzed by that. So that's that half of the coin.
So really what you're saying is you want a Ghost Rider TV show.
That's yes, pretty much. Hearing. Pretty much. Hello, Netflix. Hello, Marvel. Ghost Rider TV show. Seriously. Especially if they can pull off the effects like that and actually tell, you know, like compelling stories with multiple Ghost Riders, because no one really wants to see maybe a rehash of Nicolas Cage, Johnny Blaze just yet. It's nice that, you know, that they've teased him and that he's out there. Although that could be Danny Ketch for all we know. You know, we're not 100% sure.
Well, true. But everybody just kind of went with the OG. So
yeah, exactly. Simply because the OG Johnny Blaze is the one that's actually appearing in the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider books. All right, so the next category is another positive one. What's up?
Hold on a second. I got to do this. Free freedom! That was from Teen Titans Go. I just had to do that one.
I was like, what is that?
Because that was a really silly episode.
Okay.
You know, I wonder if maybe no one had it up in their list, but, you know, we forgot the Netflix shows like Luke Cage.
Yeah.
But I think I still would pick The Flash. But
I mean, well, yeah, I think that would still go, because Luke Cage was great and, you know, all that. But I think because Flash has been on last probably longer, that's probably why. I don't know.
Right. It probably didn't register in my mind that that was a TV show, because it was in a blur that we watched it. You know, like it's almost like a side effect of binge watching, you know?
Right.
Because they had what? Because it was Luke Cage in Daredevil season 2, correct?
Or was it Jessica? It was Jessica Jones. No,
sure.
Well, no, Jessica Jones was November 2015.
I think it would have been Daredevil season 2, right? Because we saw Punisher.
Right. So yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do a favorite binge watching show.
Then we have enough categories.
Yeah. Right. I was about to say, there's not. Yeah.
Ooh. All right. So moving on.
So now we have.
That I recognize from the least favorite movie.
It had the best soundtrack, or, you know, get you hype music.
Yeah.
I love that soundtrack.
It was good. So does Suicide Squad, actually. That was actually a pretty good soundtrack.
Yeah. But anyway. So next up, we have favorite comic book movie.
There we go. That one.
Okay, yeah, that one.
I'm still making slides.
It's not like we're giving you enough time to kind of get some of these out.
That's funny.
Just to help you out, we'll never start with you on a category.
Oh boy.
Somebody, why don't you start us off?
All right, well, my favorite comic book movie of 2016 was Captain America: Civil War, despite the fact that the plot line was disturbingly very similar to what happens in Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice.
But it did it better.
Except done better.
Exactly. Except done better. We saw probably the best superhero fight scene put to film so far. We also saw the first appearance of the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of the Amazing Spider-Man. And go ahead.
And Black Panther.
Yes, and Black Panther, because he played a huge role in this movie, and definitely ends one of it's not spoiler alert. Now, come on, it's on Netflix. It is. It also teases what the Black Panther solo movie is going to look like in one of the end credit scenes. So there was a lot to take from Captain America: Civil War. And I can't lie, I've played it a couple times on Netflix. It only dropped on Christmas, so yeah.
I'll admit I have started it, but haven't finished it yet.
Again, yeah, it's nice to have it at the ready, right?
Yeah, just, you know, some background
Exactly.
From the playing the background.
Exactly.
So Captain America Civil War was also myself and Roddy's picks.
Yes, it was.
Which leaves Derek.
And I'll say I enjoyed the movie fine. I still liked Winter Soldier better. Mm-hmm. And I thought the movie went on too long, and I didn't care for the ending where they just killed everybody off. That looked like it could have been interesting. But I went with Deadpool as my favorite comic book movie of the year. And I went with Deadpool probably because I expected so little out of it, and it delivered so much. And to
excellent
me,
point.
That was one of the big things, is that it was done on a much smaller budget. It went through production hell. It was a passion project, which sometimes can turn out to be the worst movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they delivered on just a fantastic, rip-roaring, good-time film that I will never allow my children to watch. But but nonetheless, it was great, and it's a movie I'm looking forward to. It's one I got for Christmas, so I'm looking forward to watching it again and again and again.
Hmm. That is also on HBO. Shout out to HBO, right? We need to get an ad for HBO now.
So I'm kind of wondering, because I watched Deadpool before I watched Suicide Squad, so I'm kind of wondering if that would have changed anything if I had switched the order. Probably would have gone to better.
Probably.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Switching categories yet again.
There was a Eurythmics cover in X-Men Apocalypse.
What?
From what I'm saying? Sweet Dreams are made of these by the Eurythmics. Apparently they had a cover of it or something in X-Men Apocalypse. Anyway, let's move on.
I didn't watch the movie. Couldn't tell.
Yeah, no. No, I'm just... Anyway, keep going.
And those of us who have seen it don't recall.
Like, I couldn't even...
It says Quicksilver theme, so I don't know.
Oh, maybe that was during his one cool scene that everybody loves to talk about. It's always a Quicksilver scene.
Mm. Oh, yeah. The one highlight from the past two films.
Right.
So next up we have comic book movie you are looking forward to.
Mercy. Keeping that up.
Mercy.
All right. Someone please make a gif of that.
We put it on the Vine, but no, rest in peace.
Oh, it'll be on the comic gram for sure. Come on. We'll make a gif of that. It'll be something we'll put into all of our chats and whatnot. Oh my gosh. All right, so the next category is comic book movie you are looking forward to. So I read this as looking forward to in 2017. So my picks for this category were Spider-Man Homecoming and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, both of which are supposed to drop this year. And that has me hyped for at least that aspect of 2017.
How are you going to pick two?
That's because because they're awesome. I can't pick just one in that one, because honestly, I would have put Spider-Man Homecoming first were it not for the trailer that dropped for Guardians, because that sold me. That got me. That made me think I'm jazzed that this is coming.
I don't know. I mean, the way I'm thinking about Guardians is like it's going to be more Guardians, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, but we are potentially going to get a good... Well, that's not fair. We had actually good Spider-Man movies, but we actually may get a potential great Spider-Man movie.
Mm-hmm.
The jury's still out on some of that, though.
Gotcha.
How about yours, Dirt?
You know, the only movie I'm really looking forward to is Justice League. I do believe that it's always darkest before the dawn, and that was Dawn of Justice was Batman versus Superman. And, this is going to be the one. This is the one.
It's the one.
Oh, Ronnie's slow clapping.
Honestly, I do want to see how they pulled all that together. So that is a major curiosity. But as far as mine is concerned, Black Panther, I am looking forward to that one with great aplomb.
As you said,
no, that's not going to be next year. That's right. That's there was no stipulation about it being the 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and mine is Thor Ragnarok, because the more I hear about this movie, the more excited I am for it. Looks like we'll finally get a kick-ass Thor film.
Probably because it's going to be like, it's almost going to be like a comic book on the screen, you know, like a comic book story on the screen.
It also helps to have a bunch of co-stars in it.
Exactly.
All right. All right. Next up, we get some actual comic book awards. We give some kudos to the men and women in the industry, the people behind the books that make them look great. First up is Best Penciler. So from, I had to think a little bit for mine because a couple down, I saw that almost a similar category. So I had to go back and try to think what penciler has stood out for me in 2016. And I came up with Rafa Sandoval from Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Nice.
Because that is one awesome looking book. Of course, a lot of that goes to the colorist on the book as well. But I know he does a whole lot of sort of full page and splash page works on the issues that he works on, since he sort of rotates with Ethan Van Sciver. Mm-hmm. But in at least pre-DC Rebirth, I didn't care much about the Green Lantern universe. And then Rebirth came, I tried to read Green Lanterns. I was kind of mad to it. And Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps came along, and I said, well, I'll at least read the first issue, or the Rebirth issue. So that was good. Went into the first couple issues of the series, which he launched, because I think Sciver did the Rebirth issue, and Sandoval did at least like the first three issues of the ongoing series. And like I said, it just looks fabulous. So he's my pick.
Cool. I'll just mention that my pick is Jason Fabok, who is consistently putting out what I've referred to as kind of the company look, the kind of the Jim Lee, sort of Jim Lee aping, but, you know, definitely refined to kind of reflect that it's his own style. I believe it's the company look for a lot of the books that they're trying to put out, but he does a good job at it. You know, he basically sets the tone for a lot of the big books like Justice League, and you'll spot a Fabok cover right away nowadays. So, it really has a lot of detail and it's got a lot of stuff going on, multiple characters and all kind of rendered in very classic form. So for my pick, it's Jason Fabok.
Well, this one for me was kind of hard because this pencil is not one of the things that I actually think about that much, but I guess going into the new year, that's going to have to change. Therefore, I said Mike Allred for Silver Surfer, and it also gives me a chance to give that book some love.
Yes,
with the art and
general. Yeah, it's still chugging along.
Yeah,
and mine never changes, but because he retired this year, which sucks.
Did he really? Did we talk about that on the show?
Yeah, he.
I'm not sure we did.
With the publication of Hellboy in Hell number 10, he announced his retirement. He said he's going to take a couple years off and do some painting. And he's still going to be writing those BPRD tie-in books, but as far as drawing comics, he says he's done. Now, who's to say in a couple years someone doesn't slide him a big envelope full of cash and get him to come back for something? But
right.
But
so for Dirt's Mike Mignola category of the year, it's Best Penciler.
There you go.
Unless you got him somewhere else down here. But
I purposely picked someone else differently for Best Artist. All right, so now we go to colorist.
Right, and I love the fact that we give the colorist love on this show now because, you know, I think especially in the advent of the digital comic age, we really appreciate the effects that colorists have on books more and more because they have far more tools at their disposal.
And I guess I'll start with mine because mine actually ties into Agent 70s from last category because I picked Brad Anderson, and Brad Anderson colored Jason Fabok's pencils in Justice League. And now he does some of the issues in Action Comics with the Rebirth. And I've noticed, like, oh my gosh, colors really pop on this one. Who is it? Oh, it's that same dude. So yeah, definitely. He's been my favorite for quite a while now, but definitely his work on Justice League stood out to me last year.
Right. I was thinking about going with Justin Ponsor, but I think the colorist work that really stuck out to me this year was by Jordi Belair, specifically on the Vision Limited series. So I had to go with that. That was just some phenomenal stuff. Mood setting, all of that.
And I kind of went with you for similar reasons. Not only that, but she's all over the place, but she's done a number of books that have been reading and enjoying the coloring on.
Yeah. And that's, you know, what's funny is I'm glad that you mentioned the she part because Googling her, I realized that it's a she and she's from Ireland, I think.
Yes, Declan Shelby, I believe.
Right, and I thought that was phenomenal. I thought that was just phenomenal stuff that the newest creators that we've come to admire are sometimes they're not obviously I hate to say this, Jordi's not obviously a female name, so it was a nice surprise for me to find that out, and I was glad that she's like a really cool forget up and coming colorist. She's one of the hottest ones out there right now.
Right. Yeah. There's
did
a reason
why. Jordy? Wait, did you hear the name Jordy and think that it was going to be the guy from Reading Rainbow?
You know. I knew that it wasn't spelled the same.
I mean, that thought had crossed, yes, but.
And my selection was Matt Wilson from Mighty Thor, Black Widow, Wicked, and Divine. And I'm sure he does some other things I'm forgetting. Mm. But yeah, he'll be mine almost every year.
All right.
Actually, I think Jordy was mine last year.
Yeah, that's how it goes sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we move on to our Best Artist nominees.
So actually, I want to start this one off because I think I've come down on this one, and I want to play off of yours, your last one, sort of, because I want to go with, even though I have like four or five names on here. Well, no, because I was like, one of these was going to catch it, but you know, I wasn't sure. So I think I'm going to come down on Chris Samley for Black Widow.
Okay.
If you have checked out the art on it, especially from the first issue, like it has been some great art all the way around.
I'm very behind on that.
Yeah, well, I am too. But from what I read of it and from what I've seen of it, like the light has just been pretty good. Especially going back to like the first couple of issues, but in general, plus that book needs some love anyway.
All right.
How about yours, Dirt?
Well, mine's actually, I would pick Mike Mignola again, you know, except that there was another guy who stood out to me whose work was fantastic, and that is Mitch Gerards. He, Sheriff of Babylon. Also, if you read the last Punisher series.
Yes.
Where he was fighting the Mexican drug lords, you saw his artwork all over that. Fantastic. And if you find him on Twitter, you can actually find, like, work in progress pictures and videos he puts up so you can see how he makes his artwork. And it's a really interesting process because it's like all digital based off photographs that he takes.
Yeah, he does very, he uses a lot of reference.
Yeah. And so it's fun to see the pictures of like, you know, people from the neighborhood making these weird poses that he uses as his photo references and his brother-in-law and whatever. And then when he actually makes the artwork, but the artwork is just, especially on this book on Sheriff of Babylon, it's always got this dirty, dusty, sandy,
there's like a grit to it, yeah.
Yeah, hot and oppressive, and so yeah, that's my pick for Artist of the Year.
Excellent, excellent pick. I just wanted to mention that when I met Mitch Gerards at New York Comic Con 2 years ago, I got him to do a quick sketch of the Punisher mask, Punisher in his mask, because he was uncomfortable doing sketches because he is very much a photo reference and a reference artist. And he wasn't so sure he was going to do something freehand. And I said, "Look, I'll give you an easy one." And he just took to it, and he had a lot of fun with it. I said, "Look, I'll give you something simple," and he just had a great time with it. Even though it's a super simple Sharpie sketch, you know, pencil and Sharpie sketch, it still came out really good. My pick for 2016 Best Artist was Mike Del Mundo, who is doing interiors for the Avengers and did and I think the most remarkable stuff that he did in 2016 were the covers for the Vision Limited series. Some of those covers were gorgeous, drop dead, like couldn't believe what you were looking at. Unbelievable, especially the dog catching Cap Shield. Oh, beautiful, beautiful stuff.
All right. So that takes us to the next category.
Well, you didn't do yours, Tim.
I didn't. Oh, yeah, I sure didn't.
It's okay.
Mine is Russell Dodderman from Mighty Thor.
Yep, still continuing a strong, strong run on that book.
Very strong. I'm always slightly disappointed whenever he takes an issue or two off. I'm like, aw. But even then, sometimes he'll like pop up to do like a two-page sort of mini tale.
Yeah, or like a framing sequence, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely looking forward to this upcoming arc, the Shi'ar Asgardian War, that he's going to let loose on.
Sounds
so good. Now we go to our next category, Best Writer.
This one, the Best Artist, is kind of tough.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me, too.
So
I like your pick, though, Tim.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah.
I did not have a difficult time with this one.
Well, yeah, no, neither did I, but I like that Tim made, you know, should have, you know, made my choice, you know, gave my choice a run for the money.
So I'll get mine out of the way very quickly. going with Jason Aaron. He knocked out the park on Star Wars, Mighty Thor, the Unworthy Thor that just started in Southern Basketball. Oh, and Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Enjoying a magic book.
Yeah, strong, strong output. Seriously.
He gets extra points just for that.
Absolutely.
What's yours, Dirt?
Mine actually happens to be the same as Agent 70's.
Yep.
Which, like, that blows my mind, right?
Oh, no! Stop.
I have to double-think my choice here. I mean,
but well, y'all both reference different books of this writer's.
No, they're the same.
And my second one happens to be the one that he listed, but I think he had a phenomenal year. That's Tom King, writer of the aforementioned Sheriff of Babylon and also The Vision, which has been mentioned before. So,
right.
Those two series really were my favorites of last year. And I was very sad to see both of them go.
Yes.
You know, more than I expected. So both of those books, I thought, just nailed it in two completely different ways. Mm-hmm. Those books are completely different. Now, I think he's struggling this year on Batman, and we'll talk about that in a year.
But,
but as far as 2016, that was his year with Sheriff of Babylon and The Vision.
Very quickly, I wanted to mention that I agree with a lot of what Dirk just said. I've met, the same convention I met Mitch Gerards, I also met Tom King. They were there promoting Sheriff of Babylon right before it dropped, and they were promoting their the Marvel work that they'd been working on. Tom King, you know, obviously had just started The Vision when that edition of New York Comic Con came down. Tom King did a guest appearance on a podcast that we've referenced before, that's followed us before, and that is Word Balloon with John Suntress. And the most recent episode with Tom King is very enlightening, and I definitely recommend. Shout out to John Suntress. Shout out to Word Balloon. Give them a plug here. Give that a listen to. It's a very in-depth look at Tom King, his personality, his foibles, what he goes through with the writing process. I haven't even finished the episode, and it's just been so engrossing. So, Dirt, I recommend that you listen to it. And I'd recommend that all of our listeners listen to this particular episode of Word Balloon and maybe subscribe to it and give John Suntress a shout out from us.
Well, why don't you tweet me a link?
Absolutely.
And we'll put it out there where everybody else can find it.
Not a problem.
Deal.
And Tim is gone.
I'm here.
Just covering up as he's smoking back there. He doesn't want anybody to see.
Well, I guess that just leaves me for this one then. I would love to share that Tom King love, because Vision was an absolute great book. But and I think I said this last year, and it goes without saying that Al Ewing got it for me this year, because he's kind of been in his own world with Ultimates, New Avengers, Contest of the Champions, just getting some craziness out there, but letting it be fun and still good. You know, now some could say something about American Kaiju, but you know what? We're going to let that go. and U.S. Avengers is still up in the air. But,
American Kaiju.
Yeah. But
Matt Wang's favorite character.
Yeah, pretty much.
Shout out to @MattWang97.
But I've been loving what
Al. That's a poke fun at me, to be honest. But
I don't know. there's poking fun, and then there's just kind of holding on to it
just a bit.
But but definitely Al Ewing's got it this year, so
definitely would have been he is my runner up for the year.
Who, Matt Wang?
Shout out to Matt Wang.
Yeah, shout out to Adman Wang 97
watching from work recently.
I think he's writing, so he very well could be best writer that no one's ever read.
That's funny.
All right, so that's up.
And he just tweeted something out.
It's all a joke. It's just jokes, man.
Yes.
It's just jokes. I love you, dude.
I love it. I love it. This is live podcasting, everybody.
This is good wine for $3.99 a bottle of wine.
Category is most disappointing comic.
And disappointing If you look at the slide, disappointing is too long to go in that middle line. So this is disappointing comic most.
Oh, mercy.
Nice.
All right. So let me lead this off. I will mention that I didn't have high hopes for the new relaunch of Thunderbolts in the wake of, whatchamacallit, of, not, I always call it Silent Hill, but, you know, the Avengers standoff, Pleasant Hill, you know, one of the aftermath, one of the issues that came, one of the books that came out of the aftermath of that event was Thunderbolts, and it has just been very disappointing, you know, involving Kobik and the Winter Soldier leading this new incarnation of the Thunderbolts. It's just, I can't read it. I know it's starting to tie into Captain America, Steve Rogers more. Maybe that'll be a lead back into it. But for now, I'm not looking forward to those tie-in issues.
I was about to say, unless you forget, we got Hydra Cap out of a Avenger standoff.
Yeah, that too. But I kind of, you know, like, I see where Spencer's going with this. I see like kind of the character arcs he's trying to explore. But you know, I'm not gonna
look. Cap didn't get his inversion when that happened, so at least this Cap didn't get his inversion. So this is his inversion.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough for me to come up with the selection, just because if it disappointed me, I probably forgot about it or didn't keep it long enough to disappoint me. But I'm gonna have to list Action Comics from DC Comics, just because I read the first like two story arcs and they were kind of fine, but it was nothing that really excited me about reading the issues month after month or week after by week. And I'm sure they're starting to reveal some mysteries about, or they will, about who this new Clark Kent that just popped up out of nowhere is. But like, I know at least in the beginning story arc, like the way Lex Luthor was set up as the Metropolis' new Superman, it didn't seem natural. Like, it seemed very forced. Like, I'm going to be Superman now. And he never gave he gave reasonings for it, but they didn't feel natural to me, at least. So that's what I'm going with.
Okay. Well, it went harder for me to pick this one. Civil War 2-0 issue. Because they killed Rhodey. Screw that series in the whole series.
You went out of your way to list a specific issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just went with Justice League Rebirth. I felt like the last line before Rebirth, the Geoff Johns Dark Side War was so great and so awesome and so strong. Mm-hmm. And then they followed it up with this lukewarm...
The Brian Hitch story, right?
Yeah, it just has not been good. And they have little glimmers of stuff that's all right from time to time, but it just never feels like it lives up to the potential that it has, especially considering how awesome the Dark Side War storyline was. So I'm just not feeling it with this Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't go into it with low expectations anyway, I probably would have listed that. But I expected it to be bad, so.
But see, I went in going, they learned. The last one was so great. They got it figured out now. And I was very wrong.
Just because I read his Justice League pre-rebirth, and it wasn't that compelling to me, so.
No.
Let's see. Comics that died too quickly, as in this. We were sad to see the series get canceled and go away and leave our lives forever.
Yep.
Yep.
Man, everybody, come on, pick one.
It says comics.
Yes.
Come on, man.
You added that.
That has been there the whole time.
Pick one. I'm going to delete comics.
That has been there the whole time.
Oh, man. That is
epic Cerebus, the aardvark.
Oh, goodness. All right, hey,
this isn't an obituary.
Oh, no. All right. So I'll lead off with a book that Dirt and I really appreciated and gave a lot of love to in the wake of Spider-Verse, and that is, or was, Web Warriors. For, you know, the fun stories that they told, the fairly kid-friendly stories that they told, and just, you know, stories that had a lot of spirit to them. You know, that's probably the primary choice for me, but I'm also, you know, in parentheses, also going to miss Astonishing Ant-Man and Mockingbird that really should not have gone the way of the dodo.
And one thing to follow up on Web Warriors is that I agree it was kid friendly, but it wasn't made to be kid friendly.
Correct.
It's just written so well that it doesn't have to do anything as like shock value to like, you know, and maybe that was the problem. Maybe that's why it died. Like maybe they should have had like a Spider Gwen bikini issue or something.
Maybe
that
would have maybe in the '90s, but yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, the book was just so well done. And it played on so many concepts within the comic book world. Like, it broke fourth wall many times, but not obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, making fun of, for instance, the toys that you see in the toy aisle, where it's a car that turns into Spider-Man, and you're right. Like, what the heck is this? And like, who buys these things and plays with them? And then they made a universe for it. Mm-hmm. So you know, it was so good and so inventive. And so amazing, and I'm just so sad.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Then all of a sudden, they made those toys in Toys R Us canon.
Do you want to choose one of yours, Roddy?
Yeah, since you have one of them, I picked, and I was so gracious not to least bring it down to three, since there was a rabble about it.
rabble.
Mockingbird for certainly. Is one that I will surely miss, but also Illuminati and Scarlet Witch, since I just found out that is going away, Illuminati especially, though, because that book has so much potential, you know, and I'm not one to say that, oh yeah, the villain books are always cool or whatnot, but we've had a couple in the last couple of years that have been actually pretty good. And
actually, I'll give you Illuminati, because that was one that when it came out I didn't bother to read it, and then it did a crossover with was that the Silent Hill?
That was Silent Hill. We called it Silent Hill.
and I read that crossover issue, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. Maybe I'll pick up this series, and then it was over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Mine was Contest of Champions from Al Ewan.
Yeah, no pun intended. You really did champion this book.
Yes.
Yeah, that book was great.
It brought back so many characters. We had Ares, Night Thrasher, whoever the English Punisher guy was.
There you go, English Punisher.
Introduced a character from the mobile video game.
Guillotine that was made off of it. Yeah, was made from the game. Or for the game, rather.
Goodness.
And gave her like a backstory.
Mm-hmm. Which I think that was, I want to say, when they put her into the game, the fans did that also. I can't remember.
Yeah, so basically, like I thought, when I heard the series announced, I was like, and Marvel touted as being in the Marvel Universe, I was like, this makes no sense. So basically, like, it took the idea of Secret Wars Battle World and made it almost like Hunger Games type deal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which Contest of Champions kind of was, you know, the first, what, two times it happened back in the day? So
entertaining series.
Mm-hmm. And it was Al Ewing, so.
Yep. Who else? Page 70, did you go?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Book that needs more readers. Book singular.
Fine!
Roddy just lists everything on the Marvel
publishing. No. I'm a little behind the scenes here. No, I put a couple of them thinking, I was like, well, I'll have it whittled down by the time we get to this, and it rarely ever happens.
All right, I know that Tim's book for Book That Needs More Readers is something that he's also championed for a long time.
Descender from Image by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. It's a sci-fi space tale with kid robots and giant robots and sort of bounty hunting robot killers and alien species. And it's got some depth to it. It's a nice backstory. Great painted art from Dustin, or watercolor, I guess, paint look to it. So definitely check it out. What do you have for us, Agent Cindy?
So my choice for this category is actually Daredevil by Charles Soule. I think the book kind of started off in a tough spot. He tried to introduce a new villain, creepy Ten Finger guy, and that was just a tough slog. You know, he introduced a new character called Blind Spot. But if you read it as the beginning of a much larger arc that is just kind of wrapped up with a tie-in to the Uncanny Inhumans book that Charles Soule also writes that recently wrapped up, it's a little bit more palatable. But I think this book needs more readers because it got off to kind of a tough start. I think that Soule is just starting to find a good place to put Matt Murdock in, not necessarily that he's looking for a character's for the character's voice, but he's just looking for a good situation to put the character in. I think that he's just now starting to get to that. How about you, Dirt? What's that? What's this book?
Yeah, I kind of reached out and dipped a little deeper down into the pond and pulled out Over the Garden Wall from Boom. This one sells around 5,000 copies a month, so it is pretty low on the totem pole, which is a shame. It's based off a
this is a licensed
Cartoon
property,
Network.
Right?
Yeah, it's a Cartoon Network property. And it is one of those books where it's written like old-style fairy tales, fables type of thing. Hans Christian Andersen, you could say that line of kind of fantastic and otherworldly and old world style. But it works on an adult level at the same time it works on a kid level, much like those old stories did. So a kid can read them and, you know, evil stepmother, whatever, but then there's a subtext that you can pick up with all this different stuff. And Over the Garden Wall, a lot of the stories are dealing with loneliness and despair and being lost in the woods and, you know, dealing with that type of stuff. And you can read into it a lot of deeper emotions and feelings that are going on. So I think it's a book that it's one of those, if you're at a convention or something and you see a place, it's all trades, $5 or all trades, half off or, you know, whatever. See if they've got a copy of this trade, because I think this is one that definitely everybody should pick up. It's very well-crafted storytelling that works on two different levels for kids and adults. And like I said, it sells around 5,000 copies a month, which puts it way, 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 way down there in the list of the top 300. So, or 3,000, yeah, 300, yeah. Top 300, mm-hmm. It's down there towards the bottom. So I think it's one that definitely everybody should be checking out. It's a very well-done book, and a lot of other books could take a lesson from it.
Good call.
Well, all right.
Right. So I had to actually take a look at the listing that Roddy put in and expand the cell on the sheet to see how many.
And I've just taken a bunch of it off of that. Yeah. So,
two books, but each book has two names. So doesn't that count as four books?
Oh.
I'm going to go with, even though it probably does need more readers, but I think I'm going to go with Power Man and Iron Fist. Like, this could also come under the potential book, because there's more that they could probably do with this one, even though they're keeping this, let's say, street level. But the book has been both fun and has had some things to say all at the same time. And I don't know how it's doing, you know, sales-wise, but it has been a pretty good book, and it's been one that I look forward to reading, you know, most times it comes out. So, and everything else I put on there, well, almost everything else I had in that list had some sort of an audience to it, with the exception of probably Moon Knight, but I'm not sure about what recent books is going to pan out for that one. But I would definitely say Power Man and Iron Fist.
Alrighty.
Okay, Clicking Tucker.
All right.
So what's next? We've got the best potential.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll give you some time to put that slide together.
Best comic potential. Just had to find it.
Nice.
And okay, I'll go ahead and start. This book has just amazed me, especially because it came out of left field, and it was something that I wasn't even sure I was even going to read until the first issue came out, and I just decided to pick it up and read it anyway. And that is Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye. And this is from DC's Young Animal imprint. And this book is so much fun. It's basically a Silver Age character that's disappeared along the DC history and hasn't been seen for a long time. And so the character in the book is a guy who used to be a superhero years ago and has been in retirement or has been, you know, working behind the scenes, whatever, hasn't been doing anything publicly. And now he finds himself getting pulled back in and getting back into these adventures. And it has, you know, that Johnny Quest Venture Brothers type feel to it. It has that Silver Age feel to it. And the artwork, I just spaced out on the artist's name.
Michael Oeming?
Yes, Oeming. And so he's got that look, that style, that is that stylized kind of cartoony Silver Age type look to it. So it's a perfect fit for the book. So I really love the book, and it's got a lot of room to play, you know, pulling up these old Silver Age type threads, old characters, old villains. Right now they're dealing with creatures that live in the middle of the earth And he's got a car with a big drill on it that drills, you know, through the earth to get into these caverns and stuff. So a lot of fun, good stuff in there. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what new toys they throw into that toy box.
For mine, I could have went with Agent 70 and Roddy's selection, but I think that book is already good. So, you know, it's still young in its run. So I went with another young book that crossed my fingers, hoping DC gets it right. And so far, so good. And that's Teen Titans. They've had to switch artists, unfortunately. But the replacement, whose name I'm forgetting right now, he still is very impressive. I want DC to get a nice young superhero team comic going, because I dig those, of course.
Of course.
Just like I dig the one that one of my two co-hosts is about to introduce.
Well, the book that Tim Dog is referring to is Champions over at Marvel, that Mark Waid and Umberto Ramos are taking care of, which is something that I refer to as the new Teen Titans of the Marvel Universe. Marvel has finally been able to, because of the recent publishing and character creation initiatives, really create a solid stockpile of legacy characters and characters who have really strong ties to, as I said earlier, pre-existing characters who have very strong legacies. So they've created what George Perez and Marv Wolfman created way back in the 80s, which is a really strong, a well-knit group of teen heroes, you know, striking out on their own. And even though we're not talking about this week's issue, it's still, you know, the book itself is off to a very strong start and has a lot of potential, which is why it's my choice for this category, as well as Roddy's, by the way.
Yeah, and I echo everything you say. So as far as this one is concerned, like there is so much to this book. I mean, this book is, you can say this is Young Avengers, but it's really not. But this is kind of a, I guess, an extension of the Avengers Prime properly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that says a lot.
And this is actually one of my son's favorite comics. So,
okay.
Good for him. Although he'd probably still put Sonic the Hedgehog in number one place, but this is a strong two or three in his list.
Excellent work.
Cool.
All right. Let's pause for a moment for an ad read.
Oh, I got to pull. You know what? It's funny is I need to actually still pull it up. So let's do one more, and then I'll do the ad read.
Okay. Books we're looking forward to. I just saw what was on the screen there.
It's book you're looking forward to. I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. We have a hardworking team here, people.
That's right. 4-2 with 1-0. Oh no.
Mine has 2 O's.
That's right.
I'm looking forward to as well.
So what is that book?
Well, my book, if it was spelled correctly, would be Sheriff of Babylon Season 2. They're actually calling it Season 2, not Volume 2,
mm-hmm.
which I found to be interesting. But they've announced the name is going to be something different. It's Sheriff of something else, and you don't know where that is yet. The teaser image they put out just shows it obscured by sand dunes. So, you know, it's still somewhere in the Middle East. It's still going to be in the same vein of being related to the terrorism of the Middle East and whatnot. But we don't have any details. It could be a different guy. It's definitely a different location. So we don't know how it's going to tie in 100%, but they have announced that it's coming. And so that makes me very, very happy.
Gotcha. All right. The books that I'm looking forward to are all the, I guess, the resurrection titles that are going to repopulate the X corner of the Marvel Universe. You know, looking forward to, you know, a new Generation X, new, you know, just, you know, new takes on X-Men Blue and Gold. So let's see how that goes. I'm crossing my fingers, people.
So,
was a book that was initially announced with the announcements of the DC Rebirth titles, but then held back so they could properly set up the duo, and that's Super Sons from DC, starring Damian Wayne as Robin and Jonathan Kent as the new Superboy.
Jonathan White.
White, excuse me.
Yeah, because it took Perry White's old last name.
Ah. I was about to say, I'm like, Jonathan Kent. I'm like, really? They gave him the Kent last name? I didn't know, but...
No, because Clark Kent's running around on his own in Metropolis, so they can't use the Kent name.
I see.
So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to Super Sons 2, and it's actually one that got delayed. It was supposed to come out in December, and then they decided to rework the storylines, and I think some of the storylines that were supposed to be in Super Sons ended up in Superman.
Mm-hmm.
It got pushed back a little bit so they could lay the groundwork better before just launching off into a title. But I think if you've read the recent issues of Superman that had Damian and Jonathan, you got a pretty good idea of what that book's going to be.
Oh, and Dan Jurgens is writing it, right? Is that who it is?
It's Gleason's Tomasi. Artist. Tomasi, yeah.
Peter Tomasi.
Peter Tomasi, okay.
I think that they've been working together on like the Robin book. And then the next Robin book.
Gleason and Tomasi, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Super Son. So they've been working together for a while.
But Tomasi is going to be teaming with Jorge Jimenez, who his art is like electric to me. And he's helped out an issue or two on Superman. He did the Superman annual that came out, I guess, around the Christmas holiday season. And he did the issue where the whites, I guess, went to the state fair.
Oh, okay.
So, what do you have for us, Roddy?
I have two books. One, Iron Fists, which is the book with Danny Rand and the little girl whose name Pi, whose name was escaping me. So then is the Kyle Andrews book, which I guess is going to take off after. I'm assuming they're going to bring it up after the events of Kyle Andrews' last run of Iron Fists. I'm looking forward to that one, and I'm also looking forward to America, which is the America Chavez book, because I am curious to see what they're going to do with that character.
Okay. All right, so let me do our first ad read for the night, and that is for Busted Tees. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week at a discount. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis. And on the front page of the Busted Tees page, when you get there, you'll see a t-shirt entitled Espresso Patronum. It's a coffee cup that's referencing Harry Potter. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by first going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Then click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. Money, money, advertising pays the bills. Love it.
All right. Where are we going? We're going to licensed books now, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So let me lead off the category for worst licensed title. Now, as we all know, I'm a huge fan of the character that originally started as an action figure, now owned by Hasbro. And the character that I'm referring to is ROM Space Knight. The worst licensed title for me is ROM from IDW simply because he's not part of the Marvel Universe, but is instead part of the IDW Hasbro cluster blankety blank.
But that cluster includes G.I. Joe, the crown jewel.
Exactly. And
hey, there are some good parts about that so-called cluster, by the way. The G.I. Joe stuff aside. So the crown jewel. We can't say anything bad about the crown jewel.
Oh man.
But I'll go for so this was kind of hard for me because I couldn't think of any licensed titles that were that terrible, and I didn't read much of ROM because all other than that, it would have been either that or Micronauts. But I just said any based off of Disney rides, which I don't remember if there were. I guess there was one or two left from last year. So,
well, it's Haunted Mansion. That was last year.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Enchanted Tiki Room may have started last year, but
I think it did because I think when I was looking,
is that based off of a Disney ride? Is that what that is?
Yeah,
I keep seeing it in the solicits. I'm like, what the hell is Enchanted Tiki Room?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Mine is the Wacky Raceland Hanna-Barbera series.
I almost went with that, but
it just the art definitely doesn't look as sort of the cheerful Hanna-Barbera style.
Well, I mean, that's what they were going for with the thing. But it was definitely cluttered also.
Yeah, so leave it at that.
And I think it was one of the ones out of that died early. So.
Oh, has it already been canceled?
I believe so.
And the one I went with is Trancers from Action Lab. This is actually based off a series of movies. Started in the 80s, continued during the home video boom into the 90s. And Trancers was a property so good they made 6 movies, 3 of which are actually pretty decent. Wow. And the comic book series, they actually tried doing a comic book before, and they made a bunch of mistakes, and this comic made the same mistakes, where they, instead of just saying, hey, let's continue the adventures from the movies, or adapt the adventures from the movies, they said, hey, let's take the same basic idea, but then just rewrite it, rework it, and do our own spin on it. Which, of course, is not as good as what was in that original movie that they made for $12,000 or whatever it was. So, you know, they've tried now twice to adapt Trancers to comics and failed both times. So hopefully someone's learned their lesson, but probably not. 20 years, we'll get another crack at it.
Hey, but when they do that Scanners book, you'll be turning the corner on it.
If they draw heads exploding, yeah, I'll be all over that one.
All righty. So now we're up to the best licensed title.
I cheated, just like a couple of us here.
Yeah.
With Star Wars from Marvel.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's actually licensed.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was kind of the thing. I guess we could have had that conversation, but I was kind of curious about that myself.
Right, I'll piggyback on that and say that my pick for best licensed title was Darth Vader, and I also put in my notes that I question whether or not this is an actual license.
And for me, I went with Future Quest, even though, again, not sure if that's actually a licensed title, because I believe the Hammerverse stuff is actually Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Turner buy all that stuff, and then
I think so.
He sold out to AOL, and AOL merged with Time Warner, and
So now it's all under the same
price. Yeah.
Right. Yep. But if that wasn't going to work, I was going to do Big Trouble in Little China / Escape from New York just for the concept, because I still haven't read that book yet.
But I like the idea, so it might be the best.
Exactly, and that's a pretty good get. You know,
I went another oddball one. I went with The Blacklist from Titan. If you've seen the show with James Spader, it is phenomenal. It's one of those shows that, like, it makes you feel bad, but you feel good at the same time, which is unusual. But the comic is actually written by one of the writers from the show. And so it actually goes back and fills in some of the history. So some of the stuff that they hint at, or they make a light reference to in the show, or in the show he may run into somebody and be like, oh, remember that time 20 years ago when we blah, 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 blah. And then this series is filling in a lot of those stories. So it's really an awesome tie-in to the show where they can flesh out a bunch of that stuff and you never have to worry about it, like the show overriding the stuff that they're doing, because a lot of times with licensed books they try to do like, oh, we're going to do like X-Files. We're doing season 10, and then they do a real season 10. It's like, oh, that doesn't count anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. So this one does a good job of working that license without putting itself in danger like some of those other ones do. So I really enjoy it.
There actually has been the beginning of a small trend on that front, being that the TV show getting a book that's written by somebody associated with one of the writers of the show.
Yeah. Well, and the writer, I believe it's the same person from – she worked on Fringe – and she wrote the tie-in books for Fringe for DC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so she has some experience from doing that. And those were pretty good also. So there's some experience going on there. So, yeah, that may be the beginning of that trend. A couple places show that it can be done correctly. You bring someone in and don't get too crazy, and you actually write some good stories that tie into there, and they're fun.
Right. All right. So we're leading into our next category, and hold on.
You should have just made that the wording. Yeah,
So the next category is disappointing event most. And what was our consensus pick?
Everybody picked the same one.
Civil War 2, published by Marvel.
Mm.
Gotta love it.
Can it we, lasted can we... too long. It went nowhere. It was
it ruined
a rehash of the first one.
Yeah.
So. And part of the disappointment for this series in 2016 is that it didn't end in 2016.
There's that.
Oh, mercy.
Or maybe it did.
It did.
Yeah, it was right. Yeah, final finish.
Oh,
final
yeah, finish. That's right. Yeah.
It's like 28th.
That's funny. It came out in the holiday break.
No, because yeah, right, because we talked about it. We were like, let's get this out of the way. That was the first one.
Right. Yeah. And it was terrible. I mean, look, I'll say this. It gave Original Sin a run for its money.
Oh, no.
Looking back,
or fear itself, maybe. Fear itself, maybe.
Yeah, fear itself. Yeah. No, or Axis.
Oh, no.
I'd go with
Axis.
Yeah.
Axis was way worse.
Yeah.
I need to read
because at least Original, which we, I think we brought this up last week, because Original Sin was written by Jason Aaron. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I didn't mind Original Sin as much.
Yeah, it just, I mean, it did a lot of things coming out of it. It just,
it itself didn't feel like it, like you read that. Right. That miniseries as it stood alone, and you're just like, huh?
Yeah. Right.
Like, that's for a rewritten less than a month after the event ended, right? For itself. Because I know they killed Thor, and then they brought him back right away, and Bucky died, but then he wasn't dead.
Or something like that, yeah.
I have still never read for itself.
Yeah.
just read the Wikipedia article.
probably will.
That's what I did back in those days.
And that was Fractions event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But I think that was like his send off for Marvel, if I'm not mistaken.
Nah, because he still did.
But he did Hawkeye.
Oh, he did Hawkeye. Oh,
okay. Yeah, Fantastic Four after Marvel. Now it probably soured him on. And then thinking back at it, it probably soured him on Marvel, just like Axis soured Remender on Marvel.
Right.
Because I remember Remender after the fact saying that he would never do another Marvel event just because of how, I guess, difficult it was to work on.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I always forget about Axis for a good reason.
Yeah.
So
let's get to the most satisfying event, something more cynical.
You mean satisfying event most?
Most. I like the exclamation mark at the end.
Yes. Well, that's what really sells it.
Yes.
Yeah. Roddy, what was your selection?
My most satisfying event was Spider-Woman.
Or women.
Women. Yeah, that's what I thought. But, yes. We had the three Spider-Ladies having their own event. And it was actually pretty good. I mean, there was some... I mean, I can't say that there was much coming out of it. But for outside of the fact that I would like them to do another one, if they could, you know, keep up the kind of... To think that what they had going on in that, and it was only like what, probably three or four issues or something. Actually, I don't know.
No, it was more. It was more. I think it went over the course of 2 months.
Maybe it was like six.
Yeah, I think it was six. Yeah. So I think it was two issues per book. I think the like best
Omega and Alpha. Yeah.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, they did have bookends. I was just going to mention that the best part of that is that they wanted to at least show that the other part of the Spider Universe, the Spider-Man corner of the universe, the Spider-Women corner of the universe, was connected. So right. I like that they didn't want to leave anyone, even the one in an alternate universe, Spider-Gwen, they didn't want to leave that out on an island. So they wanted to make them interconnected and have them relate to each other in some way.
I missed everything you guys said, because as soon as Roddy said Spider Ladies, all I could think of was, all the Spider Ladies! All the Spider Ladies!
Oh, goodness. Put your webs up. Oh, no. You got me doing it. Damn it!
The fact that either one of y'all is thinking about that is kind of interesting, but that's fine.
All right.
Well, so, to be fair, that's all I know of that song. Sure.
That's right. I cheated a little bit. I know that Roddy was looking to disqualify my answer for most satisfying event, but for me, the ending of Secret Wars, which did roll into 2016, was the most satisfying event, because that was such a belabored ending, but the ending was so satisfying, and we get to where we are now and the launch of the Marvel Now universe.
Well, see, part of reason why I was trying to discredit it, I was like, okay, that was an event from a year, 2 years ago, so why are you trying to bring that back up again? But at the same time, you know.
Stated facts.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Tim and I agreed on this one. We both picked DC Rebirth, which for me, the way it just exploded out, pulling in the multiverse, It brought back Kid Flash, who's been missing in action. It pulled in the Watchmen. It just took all these little threads and pieces from the DC universe and just said, hey, why not make them all to go together, and here's how. And to me, it was just a lot of fun. It was great. Artwork was beautiful. It was cheap for the big, thick book that it was when it came out, which I'm always happy for. That gets extra bonus points if they bring the price down. So DC Rebirth. And working in a comic store, I can tell you, DC Rebirth has been a thing. There have been more people coming in asking about DC books than even when they did Flashpoint into the... what did they do in 2011? What was that called? New 52.
Right.
Yeah. Forever Evil?
No. With New 52, when they relaunched the entire universe, you had some people showing interest. But with Rebirth, there's been a lot more interest. And I think probably because a lot of the books are a lot better than they were with New 52.
Yeah.
We don't have a Hawk and Dove. That tells you something. So, yeah, them lowering the price on all the books across the board, double shipping months, so you've got stories that really have a lot of energy in them, because you don't have to sit there and think, oh, what happened in that last issue? It's been so long since I've read it, because it hasn't. You're like, oh, I just read this, and this is the next one? Awesome. So it's been great the way they've been doing that, and it sells really, really well in the store. So overall, for so many reasons, DC Rebirth has been satisfying.
See what happens when you bring back the love.
You said it all perfectly, so not much else I can add to that.
Mm-hmm.
Events we're looking forward to this year, 2017.
We're split. we're split.
Slightly surprised that Dirt, me and Dirt had the same one, but
I did the same thing. I put two O's on that one. I must have typed that in for something, and it just kept like auto-correcting. Hold on.
While he's correcting, Agent 70 and myself went with Marvel's Resurrection for the Inhumans and X-Men lines.
Right.
I'm crossing my fingers, hoping that Marvel can get the magic back for the X-Men.
Yeah, seriously, knock on wood.
Bring it home.
Well, for mine and I guess Dirt's also, is the Hanna-Barbera DC annuals that is coming in March. That looks to be kind of fun and crazy at the same time, because we know DC loves their crossovers with different places. This is one that's right at home, and two pretty disparate universes coming together.
And honestly, it was something that, like, I kind of remember someone talking about it when it was announced, but I really didn't pay a lot of attention to it. And it wasn't until I sat down to fill out this form that I started looking through what's the stuff that's coming. And when I looked at these annuals, now the solicits for every single issue is out, and you can go through them and look at them. And I'm looking through just these random team ups that they're doing, and this makes sense, mm-hmm. like the way they're teaming up a lot of these groups together. So I started looking through these, and I'm going, you know what? I actually want to read quite a few of these books that are coming out. So I'm really looking forward to that month and just getting some of these great, wacky, fun books.
I need to check those out, because I guess right now I'm not reading any of the Hanna-Barbera books. I should at least read Future Quest. I think the first two issues of it.
That may be the only one. Well, my son reads Scooby Apocalypse, and he'll.
I tried reading Scooby Apocalypse, and I just didn't care enough.
Mm. But I said I was going to go back to Flintstones, but I'm not sure if that's actually going to happen.
I hear good things about Flintstones too. So
yeah,
I read it, and it wasn't fun, and I just didn't like reading them. And I've heard people like, "Oh, this is so great because it like deconstructs everything," and it's like, that's not really what I want, though. You know, like, what I want is like a fun, good time. I mean, that's why you read or watch Flintstones and that kind of stuff. So when they're like, hey, we're gonna take Flintstones and just make it horrible, it's like, I don't think I want that.
I don't know about horrible, but I think they took the modern Stone Age family thing and just kind of almost went very literal with it to a certain extent.
But so I am looking
why that could put themselves off.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Flintstones go, I am looking forward to the annual that's going to be, mm-hmm. It's Booster Gold in the Flintstones. And, of course, Booster Gold is a time traveler, so it makes sense.
Yep. Which is kind of funny, because I said when we were talking about that when we brought up in the news, I was like, Booster Gold is going to be the Great Gazoo. And I just realized that the recent issue of the Flintstones actually has the Great Gazoo, or a version of the Great Gazoo in it. So
I'm also really curious about how they're going to pull off Suicide Squad and Banana Splits.
I know.
Oh my
exactly.
God. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but just the fact that they're going to do it makes me want to read it.
Goodness. Mm-hmm. Goodness gracious. My goodness. All right. Oh, we have a worst of here.
Worst event tie-in book.
So I kind of... I'm sorry to interrupt. I kind of cheated because I don't have one specific book. But it looks like Tim kind of went along with me on this one. It's there's just so many Civil War II tie-ins. The reason that I chose is that they're published out of sequence. And not that that made them individually bad, but just overall the tie-ins were just... I felt that they were, I guess, poorly managed and still maintained the whole problem with the event, which is that people were written out of character. Characters were written out of character.
Characters written out of character.
Right.
Yeah, the majority of those, I just decided not to even mess with too many of the tie-in books unless there was something, unless it was a book I was already reading in the first place. But
I say pick a Civil War tie-in, but then for the next category, I actually select one. So.
Right. So, Dirt, you were going to say?
I was
going
to say, I'm dedicating mine to Matt Wang.
Shout out to @MattWang97.
This worst event tie-in book is from Marvel Silent Hill. And I'm choosing New Avengers number 9 with the American Kaiju.
Stop before Silent Hill actually sticks. So.
Because I'm pretty sure I was cancer-free before I read that book.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, the American Kaiju thing was bad. That's why I was almost inclined to go with you.
I have a question about that. That's not the guy that's Red Hulk now, is it?
Oh, I didn't read that yet, dude.
I don't think so. No,
wait, there's a young guy, right?
There's a new guy.
It's not Ross.
There's supposed to be a new Red Hulk. Yeah, I saw a tease, but I didn't read the.
I read it. It's not Ross. Okay. And
I didn't know who that guy was.
I thought it was. I will say this much. I thought it was General Ross. I'm like, wait a minute. Why? What happened?
Yeah, I read in interviews that they said it wasn't going to be him anymore.
Right. So. But they pretty much got a stand-alike. So
we'll get to that next week when we review books.
All right.
Let's see. Best event tie-in.
Right. So again, I kind of cheated. I just said the various issues of the Spider-Women event.
I'm trying to see if I pick something not. Oh, I know what I pick. I'm going to change mine.
Okay. Well, while he's doing that, I am going to go ahead and say Ms. Marvel's Civil War II tie-ins.
Yeah, those were good.
Yeah. And they kind of hit close to home for her and the mischaracterization of Captain Marvel.
Right.
But, you know.
Mine is the issues of Amazing Spider-Man that tied into Dead No More.
Ah, good, good pick.
Okay.
And Dirt.
For me, the best event tie-in book was Flash Rebirth 1. The Flash Rebirth event brought Wally West back and talked about the fact that like there's a Wally West in this universe. So who's this other Wally West? And of course, the readers know who he is, but no one else knows. And as he moves through the DC universe, you know, it plays up all the changes that have happened with the New 52 and with Convergence and all of this, you know, stuff that plays with the DC timeline and the multiple universes and everything. And it was just great because Flash has always been that book. You know, he was always the guy that would travel through time, would go to the parallel universes. He was the one that would, you know, use the cosmic treadmill to take the Justice League to go visit the Justice Society and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. So for all of that from the Rebirth event to tie into Flash made sense. Plus it had beautiful artwork. It was a great story. And it was one of those that I probably read it 3 times the week it came out because I just enjoyed it so much.
Good call. All right. Now we're on to the most surprising event tie-in book.
Okay.
I believe you actually have event issues, Agent 70.
Hold on, do I? I got to scroll down. My apologies. Oh, yes. The issues that I picked were the Dead No More Clone Conspiracy issues, specifically 1 and 2, because I was surprised at how... kind of not bombshell, you know, they weren't dropping bombshells per se, but, you know, I thought it was a very well-crafted, well-written story, you know, going from one issue to the next. You really could have gone without the Amazing Spider-Man tie-ins and still kept reading just the event, and I really like that about those 2 issues. The 3rd issue is kind of, well, the big reveal, but I thought the first 2 issues were strong on their own.
Wouldn't those be more event issues by themselves than tie-ins?
That's one way to look at it too, you know.
Because if we're gonna do that, I can change mine.
Right? No, I understand.
But I'll stick with mine. You know, I've hated the event. I think the way... Actually, yeah, the way Power Man and Iron Fist handled their inclusion in Civil War 2 didn't hamper the book much at all, so...
Right.
Kudos for them, you know, not stepping on that landmine.
Right, working it in, really, you know...
It's not a Mighty Avenger situation.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, for mine, I'm going to go with Transformers More Than Meets the Eye Revolution number 1, which was pretty much a one-shot issue. It had pretty much nothing to do with Revolution outside outside of having mentions of characters from most of the characters and whatnot. It was just a goofy, funnish book. You know, that was, like I said, loosely tied to the event itself.
All right. And Dirt?
I got nothing. Yeah. This is the one. I could not come up with anything. The best I could do was Secret Wars 2, T-O-O, but that was from 2015, so that one doesn't quite make the cut. And that's probably where my T-O-O's came from all night, because I was thinking about that one. Trying to come up with something for this stupid category.
Listen, I misread the title. I'm just like, oh, maybe Tim is right. Maybe I did misread, you know, this tie. It really shouldn't be the main issues of the event. So I may have to come back and revise those answers.
But yeah, I got nothing. I can't.
It happens. Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe if I looked at it as surprising as like how awful and terrible the tie-in was. And with that, I could probably throw this one out for Matt Wang, New Avengers number 9 from Marvel Standoff featuring the American Kaiju.
There you go.
That's going to be it for me as far as that one goes.
Worst gimmick or variant cover.
All right.
So I pull a Dirt here and abstain. So I definitely have nothing.
Yeah, I almost did that. Yeah. Which I don't know if mine's counted or not. And I'll just go ahead and say... any of the pool covers, you know, Deadpool, Gwenpool, whatever, which now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure how many of those were actually.
No, there were a bunch.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. That didn't actually have to do with the characters themselves.
Because
I think there was a month that they were doing like Deadpool covers and whatnot or something.
So, my, again, now I'm looking at two sides of the same coin. My worst gimmick/variant covers are the hip hop covers, the Marvel hip hop covers that homage. Or done for less than, quote, classic albums. You know, I know that they're trying to, you know, cross-pollinate and, you know, promote some of the new school. Forget even new school, like just the current stuff that's out there. But it's just tough because some of it's just completely unrecognizable. And it's like, what's the point? You know, some of the nostalgia strings aren't being pulled, which was some of the draw to the first run of the hip-hop covers.
For me, it's the gimmick of the Loot Crate. Covers which give the book an artificial sales boost. I'm so sick of hearing like Orphan Black was the number one selling book. No, it was not. It was you gave it away for free in Loot Crate. It is not the number one book. Like, stop. We got to stop doing this.
And I was wondering where you was going with that, because I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. If you go and look at comic sales, you'll see that that when Loot Crate offers an exclusive cover in their Loot Crate box, like it doesn't change the sales of Loot Crate. Like, people aren't buying Loot Crates to get that cover, but because so many people get Loot Crate, whoever is able to get their comic in there will say, well, look, we had the number one comic.
That's funny.
That month.
So it, does that mean that we should have been picking Loot Crate issues for the fantasy draft?
You know.
All righty.
We did do a draft at one point on the show. What ever happened with that?
That's exactly why I mentioned
it. It's still going.
It can be tallied.
Oh, man.
Time to do it.
That's funny. All right. So we'll get to best gimmick or variant covers. And like I said, the other side of the coin for my choice for worst is the hip-hop covers by Marvel that homage truly classic albums. There's a couple of them that came out more recently, like the Cage homage of LL Cool J. That, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. But some of the more recent ones that have come out, like I said, you know, it's a little tough. But to see a really truly classic album come out, it was pretty cool.
I kind of went with you, even though I almost went with the coloring book of covers, but I'm not sure if that kind of. But I thought I kind of went with you, even though, you know, classic is
Right. It's yeah. It's in the eye of the exactly. It's in the eye of the beholder. It's obviously subjective to age, but you know, it's you know, it, in my mind, I thought that those are the ones that really pull off the gimmick the best.
Right. Well, yeah, it's pretty much the one that got us gotten us grabbing all of those
exactly
things. So,
what do you have, Tim?
He's already abstained.
Yeah, I was abstained again.
You know, for me, again, as working at a store, I look at some of this stuff a little differently. The best gimmick or variant covers have been the DC Rebirth variants that have no minimums to order. One thing I hated about the hip-hop covers that we talked about on last year's wrap-up was the fact that they were tied in with this weird algebraic formula to other books that you ordered. You had to get out your slide rule and your TI-89 calculator and figure out if you order those things or not. And DC has done the most remarkable thing where every book has a variant, and if you want to order the variant, you just order the variant, and you order as many as you want. So stores, if they wanted to, could order 0 of the regular cover and 100 of the variant, and it doesn't make any difference. And, you know, that is just so refreshing and fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I love that, and that's how my boxes in my home collection are getting filled with variants these days.
Cool. All right. So we are now up to the category most disappointing publisher. We all had a vote. You know, we all had nominees for this one. I'll lead off. My choice for most disappointing publisher in 2016 is IDW. Note, not every publisher needs an all-encompassing universe for its titles.
And the funny thing about that is that it's a two-edged sword where, from the publisher's point of view, they say, we're going to tie all these books together. So if you're buying G.I. Joe, you'll want to pick up Transformers and Micronauts.
Right.
But what we see is actually the opposite. People go, I just want to buy Transformers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And because it's tied in with everything else, I'm just going to drop them until this craziness is over, and then I'll come back in a year. So we've actually seen sales on most of that stuff actually go down.
Mm.
The only one that's still doing well is the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero series, which doesn't tie into anything because it's in a separate universe continuing the old Marvel timeline. So, you know, as far as we see in our sales, that's the only book that's still doing well out of the bunch. But for me, what I chose as my most disappointing publisher is Dark Horse, because they let Mike Mignola retire from drawing comics. I'm sorry, Dark Horse, but you dropped the ball.
Let this the man live.
This is one of those situations, Dark Horse, where I don't care if you have to sell your back stock, if you have to sell furniture out of the offices. I don't care if Mike Richardson has to get his haircut down at the Haircut Academy, where the kids are doing it just so they can have the experience of cutting hair. But you got to do what you got to do to save that money to pay Mike Mignola to get him to keep drawing Hellboy comics.
Hmm.
Alrighty then.
I also went with Dark Horse just because there's nothing, at least recently, that's caught my attention.
I kind of went with Valiant for the same reason.
Shows his face.
Like, what was that? Oh.
No, that was from...
what are you talking about? There's nothing there. What are you saying?
That's funny.
But yeah, no, I agree with you on Valiant, too. I was real excited when they said Valiant was coming back, but nothing they've really done. Exo Manowar, I think, is the only book that I've looked at and thought, eh, that could be interesting, but they keep tying everything and everything, and a lot of their books they cancel and try to restart them under a different title, or they tie them into some other series, or they do that 3001 or whatever it is when they're, you know, way in the future. And just like I was so excited, you know, 2 years ago, and it just, nothing has panned out from them for me.
And I'm gonna try to give Valiant a chance again.
Well, you, out of all of us, were the one at least trying a couple of those.
I read, you tried those 3000 AD ones, didn't you?
I've
read a couple of them.
Stuff here and there. Like all those event series I've read. They just started a new one, Divinity 3. I read the first issue of, where they kind of did like a Secret Wars type thing where the whole universe was reshaped in Stalinverse, they call it, where Russia controls everything.
Oh, yeah, that's part of Stalin. Divinity.
Yes. So, yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Huh. All right, and so we've got our
most valuable publisher.
This is the best publisher most.
All right. Interestingly, we actually cover most of the gamut of the publishing, or the major publishing world, at least.
And your pick, what I would have given for, I would have said for most disappointing publisher for your reasons.
Yeah, I'm really confused by this pick.
Right. See, what's funny about that is I think that it's most, I think what makes Marvel the most valuable publisher is that it's giving so many crazy characters unexpected shots at solo titles that also gives a bunch of creators who we may not be all that familiar with a chance to put at least 3 or 4 issues or 5 or 6 issues out and get their feet wet and get some exposure. So in a sense, it's acting very much like a small publisher. Mm-hmm. You know, and still maintaining their intellectual property. That's obviously the intended benefit that no one is really thinking about.
Wait, are you telling me there wasn't a writer looking at all of the Marvel Universe saying, I have a story to tell, and only Fool Killer can be the star of this story?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. We may want to reach out to that writer, whoever the hell it is that's writing Fool Killer, and get him on the show.
No.
I like some of the creative teams on those solo books, but I ain't reading them.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Most valuable publisher?
Tim and I both picked the same company, which is another, crazy thing that happens with these end-of-the-year wrap-ups, but we both picked DC Comics. And for me, one, it's the whole multiverse timeline crisis, et cetera, thing that they've got going on with their books. But also, again, I love that they drop the prices. I love that they're double shipping. And kind of going along the same lines as with what Agent 70 was saying about Marvel, is that DC, with doing that accelerated schedule, they do bring in other artists and occasionally other writers to help keep that schedule in place of getting those books out. And so you do have... occasionally, a different artist will come in. Now, sometimes on, like, Cyborg, they bring in a guest artist. You're just like, ugh. Mm. But that guy was pretty rough. But then, you know, you look at some of the other books, like Action Comics, and there may be, I think, 3 different main pencilers that they tend to use. And I like them all, you know? So it really kind of depends on the book. But just overall, everything they've done with Rebirth has done so well for me as a reader, but also in the store. We've seen such an uptick in interest in DC more than anything else that's been going on the last few years. So that, to me, makes them the best publisher. Roddy, you're muted. You're muted.
I know. No, this is what I was saying had nothing to do with nothing. Yes, most valued publisher. I'm going to go with... granted, for this one, it could be... you could easily go with Marvel or DC because, okay, those are the bigger ones, and they've been, as far as, you know, I've been reading... the most stuff I've been reading, but I kind of want going with Image because they've been plucking along, throwing some books out there that have one lasted and kind of have a good appeal to them. Like, I know there's a couple of books that, granted, I'm behind on that are still trucking along, that are still, the last I checked, pretty good. You know, I'm pretty strong. So that's kind of my reasoning for going with Image. It was either that or IDW, but I think Image is the one. Looking through their lineup, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna need to go back and check some of that out.
Yeah, but Image doesn't have the crown jewel of the...
That's a great point.
Goodness gracious.
And
now we come to the payoff.
Second to last category, clicks of the year.
Yay!
All right, so wait, are we going to do this as like one? We have 2 categories written here. We had some confusion filling out the spreadsheet, so we have 2 different groups. Are we going to do one as an issue and one as a series?
I didn't indicate a specific issue, so
neither did I, but I mean, go for it.
Well, I was about to say Roddy and I are actually in agreement for the 2 books that that we're picking as, I guess, clicks of the year. And even if we had done a survey of the books that we've selected as clicks of the year, I'm fairly certain that my picks for 2016 alternated between the 2 books that I picked and Roddy picked, which mm-hmm. were The Vision and Ms. Marvel.
So here's what I'll do. For Click of the Year single issue, I will go with Vision #1 because that pretty much knocked it out apart from the get and kind of had you going from the start. For series, Ms. Marvel, because there is, out of almost pretty certain there's not a single time this year where Ms. Marvel's come up where we've done a show where I've not said that this was my click of the week. I feel fairly certain about that because the book is just that good to me personally. There. But I'd also go for Vision for series of the year also because that was a damn good book.
Yeah, and it was close with Vision for me. That almost, you know, in my second spot down there at the bottom, I almost went with Vision. But as far as I actually picked single issues, but I can expand my second one to be the whole series. But I want to start with, like, this one particular issue to me stood out as issue of the year, Hellboy in Hell number 10. And if I haven't made it clear yet on this particular podcast, I like Mike Mignola's storytelling and artwork.
No.
I don't know if I've enumerated that enough, but just in case you tuned in late, Hellboy in Hell has just been the series for me. I've been in love with the character ever since, you know, the first appearance came out in Next Men in 92, I think it was, 93, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Hellboy in Hell 10 finished the series. And the funny thing was, it wasn't supposed to be the ending. It's just when he started drawing it, the story started telling itself, he says. And when he got to the end, he just knew that that was it, and it was over. And so he decided to end it right then and there. And the ending is basically, if you haven't been following Hellboy, he is a demon. He's a prince of hell. He was supposed to take over hell and damn the world and start the conquest of the world for Beelzebub. And instead, he decides that he wants to be a normal guy. And so, you know, if you've seen the movies or you've seen the animated specials or you read any of the comics, you know that he tries to play it off like, even though he's 7 feet tall and red and has a big enchanted hand and has these horns that he constantly has to break off and file down, he tries to just be a normal guy going about his life facing off against weird stuff. And what it finally came down to in the book is that he had to face off against the legions of hell and take on his brothers and take on his father. And he did. And he destroyed them. And so now he was in position to take over all of hell. And he just basically said, no.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is not the life for me. This is not what I want. I refuse to be a part of this game. And he finds in hell along a sulfur lake, there's a little cottage, a Victorian-style small house. And he goes inside and there's a library full of books. And he just says, I'm just going to sit here for the rest of eternity and read the classics. And that's how the story ends. And it was just kind of one of those poetic, really literature-inspired type endings that it was perfect and it made sense and it was heartbreaking. And I hated to see it go, but at the same time, you just couldn't have ended it any better way. So for me, it was that particular issue. Hellboy in Hell number 10 is the issue click of the year for me. Now then, since we had a second spot, I went ahead and put Sheriff of Babylon down there because that's another book, in case you haven't been paying attention on this show. I really like that. Now, that's also written by Tom King, who did The Vision, and it was kind of tough picking between Vision and Sheriff of Babylon. But I also, because I'm super uber comic nerd, I picked a specific issue of Sheriff of Babylon. Mm. So Sheriff of Babylon number 5, which is the issue where they stay up late and get drunk. That's basically what it is. And that issue just sets the tone for so many things that have happened before in the book and so many things that come after, and really shows you, even in a place like Iraq with a Muslim woman and an American man sitting there drinking wine in a bombed out building, they have so much more in common than you ever could have expected. And so it was just a really wonderful book, a gem in the middle of the series. But again, it's Tom King. It was tough to pick between Sheriff and Vision, and I could have gone with Vision, but that particular issue of Sheriff of Babylon stuck with me, so Sheriff of Babylon is my series of the year.
Cool.
I went with a series and a specific issue. For the specific issue, I went with DC Universe Rebirth number 1 just because it rocked the comic book world when it came out.
Mm.
And for series overall, I mean, come on, it's got to be Mighty Thor. I picked the artist, colorist, and writer for categories for the year or so.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I would like to point out a little stat from that, or two from that. Wait, is everybody done those, right? Like, did you do yours?
Yes, because we have the same ones.
Yeah, okay. So here's a little stat from last year. For clicks of the year, apparently we had Dirt chose Hellboy in Hell. Tim picked Thor / Mighty Thor. I picked Thor's Darth Vader and Ms. Marvel, so no surprise on that one. And Agent 70 picked Secret Wars, Darth Vader, and Ms. Marvel. So it's nice to know we have some sort of consistency going on around here.
So you're saying you tied on all three of those titles on your clicks?
What? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Are you saying that's just what we chose at last year's
round? No, this was last year's pick. Yeah, clicks of the year.
I thought you went through all the clicks.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No. Well, because both Agent 70 and I had, but well, and Tim. Well, I guess yeah. Tim had two books, and the rest of us had three, except for you, Dirk. But
alrighty. So now we are in our last category: our New Year's comics resolutions for 2017. I like Dirt.
Mine, and let me tell you something. I've picked a Herculean task.
Mm-hmm.
My New Year's resolution for 2017 is to organize my paper copies. And that includes, I have comics in the basement, I have comics in the TV room, I have comics in the computer room, I've got a couple boxes stashed up in the bedroom. I think there's some boxes in my son's closet, and none of them. I think there might be like three boxes that are like in order amongst those three. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just a free for all. Wow. Like, it's just, that's you could probably like chronologically, like mm-hmm. see what I collect by going backwards, you know, through the boxes, because they just, they come in, I read them, they go in the boxes every so often. I'm like, oh, I want to read that. And I spend 6 hours flipping through boxes, trying to find them all to read them again. So this year, one way or another, I'll probably just go through and alphabetize in the box that they're in and then save for next year. Going through and actually getting them all in order from box to box. But yeah,
I was about to say, Dirt, I know that. I think 2 years ago, this was my resolution. And what I ended up doing to implement that resolution, or it took me pretty much a year, was getting the drawer boxes, the store, you know, from the collection company or whatever they're called.
Right.
They're awesome. Right. And I need to get more because I need to kind of organize some of the stuff that's come in and try to implement my resolutions for this year. But I also wanted to add, and I know I've mentioned it on the show before, is that, you know, putting in like kind of inventorying, doing an inventory of my entire collection was a huge task. But once I did it, it's so helpful to know exactly what you have. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about this on previous shows, like trying to, I think I asked you to, speak to some of your customers about what programs they use to organize their collection. And I ended up settling on collectors, comic collectors with a Z at the end, because the app is cool because the phone apps and the tablet apps you can use to scan the barcodes
for
the current books and have them be automatically added to your program. And obviously you can just do like block adding, like say you've got Uncanny X-Men like I do, like from 131 to, you know, 200, whatever. Just select all of them, you know, select like one each, and then it'll just add just like that.
Yeah, so that is, and the company that makes that, they make software for keeping track of your movies, keeping track of your CDs, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, everybody. The one thing is that everybody wishes it was a little cheaper.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's definitely the software that everybody has said that they use when they go to inventory their books, and it's probably something I'm going to have to break down and get into also myself. Right. Here.
There is a more expensive option, which is Comic Base, but this is like kind of the middle ground for the, you know, in terms of cost, and not that I'm shilling for them, but at the end of the day, I've really appreciated using their software. And it's a shame that we didn't have a chance to talk about this before the holidays because they were having a sale.
Yeah.
So,
and they usually do around the holidays and probably one or two other various times of the year. So sometimes it's good to.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to keep a lookout for that. And they do a good job of technical support, because I have emailed them in the past about some issues, and they responded very quickly. And two, they do provide regular updates to their software.
Mm-hmm. To piggyback on both of y'all's, I pretty much want to do the same thing. And in fact, this is rather shameful. Not only do I need to go back and get either find my old boxes of, because I got some boxes in my garage that I need to kind of bring in and get those drawer boxes that you were talking about. Because as a matter of fact, I was going to ask you about them, but I found the website again. So now I just need mm-hmm. to order some, get some. But
yeah, those are on the expensive side. That's actually mm-hmm. far more expensive than they really should be, but it's shipping more than anything. But go on.
Right. But at the same time, I also have to be good about, because like at this very moment, in three different spots right close to me are probably a good 3 or 4 weeks of comics that I haven't cataloged yet and socked away and bagged and whatnot. So I need to get better about actually doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to getting all my old stuff together and putting them all together and, you know, also expanding my comic awareness, like basically start or continue to read more books that are not from the big two,
right.
That are, you know, that pique a fancy.
Right. Yeah, no, very quickly. I like that one too. I need to kind of adopt that as well. My goal for 2017 for my comic collection is to actually get rid of comics that I no longer want in my collection. You know, I really need to sit down and make the hard choices, either sell them, donate them, or give them away to people who will actually appreciate them. I've got huge runs of books that I've taken into my collection as favors for other people to kind of safeguard them or, you know, just basically integrate them into my collection. And I really haven't read them. They're just sort of taking up space. And, you know, I should probably just, you know, kind of weed those out of my collection. I also agree with you guys. You know, I want to just keep, you know, I've got stacks of books that are, you know, that need to be filed away. I do need to better organize, get on top of kind of integrating these back into the drawer boxes. I do need to order some more drawer boxes, unfortunately. The last thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, 2016, you know, was trying for a number of reasons on a personal, professional, and even on the comic book chronicles level. You know, I actually missed the episode where we had a guest that was an old friend of mine because of certain, you know, because of things happening, and it was just a tough year overall. But what I wanted to do is kind of revive and strengthen our social media and website presence. Just, you know, things coming up on the website like content and, you know, more, you know, getting back to tweeting on a regular basis. You know, we used to tweet our clicks of the week and we kind of fell off on that. I want to get back to, if not that, at least more, you know, more just being more present in the moment on that stuff. You know, I've already tried to start tweeting out action figure stuff just because, you know, this is fun to me and it's still Comic Book Chronicles related. So, you know, that's something I want to do in 2017.
And mine is to read some more comic books that aren't from the big two.
Agreed.
So again, more of the Images, the Valiants, Dark Horse, check them out. IDW, Boom. At least find one from each publisher to read on a either rotating a regular basis.
And there's always Zombie Tramp from Action Lab.
Yeah. Well, listen, I was about to say Zenoscope and Action Lab and you know, and those other publishers, they all have, you know, quality stuff. It's just that, you know, we're often overwhelmed by the stuff that's put out by the big two.
Zenoscope was almost my MVP.
No kidding.
Kinda.
Might have to check out some Lion Forge. Their superhero universe. Yeah.
Mm.
Alrighty, so as we come to the end of our 2016 year in review show of the Comic Book Chronicles, I'll finish up with an ad read. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, cell phone cases, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
We want to thank you all for tuning in to us through 2016 and into 2017.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Thanks for sticking with us. We're a couple episodes away from 200.
I wish I could do the baby Groot.
We're getting up there in age.
Yes.
But we don't mind it.
No, not at all.
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDLGG98 and at CBCron. Also follow Matt Wang, 97, friend of the show. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and go to popculturenetwork.com. Right there. Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Needs.
And at CB Caps on Instagram.
There you go.
Boom. So we'll be back next week. Oh, also, when the episode goes up, if you feel like responding to our picks, use the hashtag CBCron. Let us know your thoughts or just comment on the comment section of the podcast episode.
Yes. We'd like to hear back from you guys. And gals. Plenty of gals out there. Let me not, close that out.
That's true.
I want to hear from all the ladies.
We are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!